Welcome to the New Academy podcast, a somewhat monthly series wherein we talk with specialized faculty in the English department about their professional lives. I'm Mary Lucille Hayes.
I'm John Claiborne.
And I'm Dave Morris. We're coming out of hiatus to introduce you to new specialized faculty who have joined our ranks over the past 2 years.
Over the past few weeks, John, Dave, and I met with each new specialized faculty member to ask about their backgrounds and their interests.
We have 9 new people to introduce you to. Over the next 2 episodes, you'll hear about their various professional lives.
We hope you'll join us in welcoming our new colleagues to the English department. We're here with Danny, and Danny, could you briefly introduce yourself to us and maybe tell us about when you arrived and what you're teaching here?
Sure. My name is Danny Nikosh. I got here in the fall, so that would be fall of 2021, and I'm teaching Rhetoric 105.
Okay, great. And where are you coming from most recently?
So that's a long story, but for 7 years I was teaching in Hungary, in a city in southern Hungary called Szeged, at the University of Szeged, and I came back in the spring of 2020. At the end of spring. So I taught the spring and then I came back after it. Uh-huh. And I did a year of basically not being in academia, trying to.
So Danny, can you tell us a little bit about your other professional interests outside of teaching rhetoric?
I mean, I've got lots. Like, something I was thinking about as I was preparing for an interview is like, will I be able to say everything that I'm interested in? So I'm really interested in creative writing. I write mostly fiction, short stories and novels, and I haven't had any novels published, but I've written a few, and you know, it's one of those things where every now and then when I get up the courage, I send them out again, hoping to get those published. But I do write short stories. I've had a few published. I've had one poem published, which sort of makes me smile that like that poem has ended up in like textbooks apparently and stuff. Every now and then I'll like, you know, see somebody who's like posted something for a class, which is a response to my poem. But outside of creative writing, and we can talk more if you want about like what specifically I'm interested in my fiction, but I'm also interested in literary studies. I've done mostly 19th century fiction and like weird fiction.
Okay.
So I've had a few things published about writers like H.P. Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard.
Right.
And that's something that I've been really interested in for years. And it's something that, you know, is definitely problematic. And a lot of the conversation has taken over with discussions about things like toxic masculinity and xenophobia, representations of gender. And I'm trying to sort of find the best way to have those conversations. Like I've been working on an article about the representation of whiteness in a specific H.P. Lovecraft story. And so in addition to those things, what else? I wrote 2 dissertations. We can go into that story if you want, but basically I had to write a second dissertation. I do a second PhD entirely in Hungary, because they didn't accept the fact that my dissertation for my degree that I got at UNL was a novel, because I was specializing in fiction.
Oh.
And to teach in Hungary, you have to have a Hungarian university basically, I don't know how to describe, like reissue your dissertation as a dissertation done at their university. And because no university in Hungary would accept a novel as a dissertation. At first, it was suggested that maybe I could just write another dissertation, but then it ended up as I had to start all over. So, you know, those dreams you have where you're back in school because, yeah, you know, something went wrong with your degree and I have to do it all over again. I did that, you know, while also teaching. So I admit, yeah, that I'm not terribly proud of the work line to line of my second dissertation. I wasn't able to make it as good as I can. But I think a lot of people look back on their dissertation thinking, well, if I Definitely. Had, you know, taken more time and had nothing but time to write that, and I wasn't also teaching, but, you know, it's 5 or 6 classes at the same time, then it would have been very different.
So I have to ask, is the fiction you write and your scholarship on weird fiction, does that sort of align? Do you write speculative or strange fiction, or?
Yes. Honestly, a lot of what I'm working on these days is that these things which have different magical or supernatural or uncanny elements, and you know, I have a sort of love-hate relationship with the expression a magical realism. I think that that's become kind of a buzzword, but it is at the same time also something that I am very excited by, and that I think is a really wonderful thing happening right now in fiction. And I do absolutely write things like that.
Cool. So is there anything else you could tell us about your creative writing or scholarship? And this is really a broad question, that something that's really interesting you now or anything like that?
Sure. I mean, something that I've gotten interested in just recently, and I don't even know the first place to start with, like, actually, you know, like, doing any kind of like collaboration or work on this, but I've gotten really interested in AI stuff and the AI different programs and applications that could potentially be used for sort of supplementing and helping things like creative writing. For example, there's ways to make an AI generate text with natural language processing, which I've become really interested in. And there's a couple of these websites where you can, you know, put in text and then the AI tries to figure out what the next part would be. Like, it tries to like continue the story, for example. And so I've been kicking around this idea of like trying to maybe find people here at the university who are interested in this sort of thing and doing a project with them, trying to put together some sort of an application that would do this. But of course, I know that this would require like massive like GPU resources to run this sort of AI processing. And I don't know if that's something the university would get behind. I don't know. So I've been thinking about this, and this is something that I've been looking at for a few months. The other thing is that there's like AI generated art programs, which I find have been really cool for like generating like concept art for what I'm working on. So find it to be, and it's actually really great as a writer, you know, when I'm trying to like picture these scenes, to be able to go into one of these applications and then do that. Like, I'm also an artist. I enjoy drawing and you know, doing things with Photoshop. I don't know if I can call it painting if there's no paint involved. I've always sort of drawn pictures to go with whatever it is I'm writing. I think it's really, you know, useful for me to be able to visualize something, not just in my head, so, you know, with my eyes. And, you know, I've also sort of played with the idea of trying to write a graphic novel, although I don't know if my art skills are quite good enough for that.
So I think you may have just answered my next question, but I was going to ask you if you had any sort of outside interests that aren't quite in these professional areas. And I think you talking about drawing is definitely an answer to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love to draw. It's something that I've been doing much more seriously for a couple of years now. I bought myself one of these drawing tablets that attaches to your computer. I have, you know, a pen that I can draw on with it, and it can do different things like pressure sensitivity. And it's really kind of magic to me, you know, who for years and years used traditional media. You know, just being able to, you know, at the touch of a button, like undo a brush stroke is still sort of, you know, alchemy to me. Other than that, like, I'm a huge nerd. I'm a huge fan of Star Wars and Star Trek. And
sure.
I'm big into like role-playing games and Dungeons and Dragons and more obscure esoteric role-playing games, most of which I'll probably never actually play.
Yeah. And you play some of the role-playing games online, right? I remember talking to you about it before.
Yeah, absolutely. So like right now, with the pandemic and everything, we're playing mostly online. And I'm also really into video games. I did that more earlier, especially when I was younger. Now I mostly play with friends. You know, I'm more of a social gamer than gameaholic, I guess, if I'm going with this metaphor.
So we have a few what we call really quick questions. We have five of them that we're asking everybody. What's funny is I think a few of them we've already talked about in the past, just in conversation. But they're little silly things, so not
fantastic.
Seriously. The first question, and I think I know the answer to this, but do you have any pets?
Unfortunately, no. I'm allergic to dogs and cats. I love them. I love animals so much. And I'm the sort of person who, like, even though I know that I'm allergic to them, I still, like, will pet them. And so I'll just be miserable. But, like, when I was living in Hungary, I was out on a bike ride with some of my colleagues, and we found this little very sick kitten, and I grabbed it, put it in my backpack, and took it to a vet, thinking, well, of course, you know, I'm then just going to be able to pass it off to the vet, and the vet's going to, you know, give medicine and whatnot, find a home for it. But the vet was, like, offended at this notion of, oh, like, what would I do with this animal?
Yeah.
And so I tried taking it to different shelters that they were all full, and so I put up an ad on Facebook and everything, but this cat ended up living with me for months, and it was just, like, such an amazing cat. Like, I fell in love with this cat. And he was just, like, such a friendly, like, sweet little animal, and so grateful. And it really kind of broke my heart to have to say goodbye to this cat. One of my students, actually, because I told my students the story, one of my students took the cat in, and I think that was a sort of good ending to that story. Every now and then I'll think to myself, you know, oh gosh, like, you know, that cat did bring such joy into my life. But at the same time, it's also nice to be able to, like, sleep and
breathe.
And be able to, like, breathe. And it was, you know, like, the situation with the cat was, like, the first rule was, okay, the cat doesn't, like, come into my bedroom. And then it was, the cat doesn't, like, get to go out to my bed.
Yeah.
And then it was, the cat doesn't get to sleep in my bed. And then it was, okay, the cat gets to do whatever it wants.
I recognize that. Yeah. So the second question is, what's the most surprising thing that's happened since you arrived here in Urbana-Champaign?
Oh, surprising. Well, I mean, I have to be honest, there hasn't been a ton of room for surprise because I haven't really, like, gone out and done much.
Yeah.
With the pandemic and everything, I've really tried to spend as much time as possible just at home, which has been kind of miserable. I'm not really a home kind of person.
Yeah.
But something which has been, I don't know if I call it a surprise, but a real joy, is the fact that I live in Orchard Downs, and, like, literally, like, adjacent to Orchard Downs is this beautiful arboretum, and just, you know, being able to go for a 10-minute walk and,
yeah,
you know, and walk around there and, you know, just meditate on the pond, or go and sit in front of the Japan House and look at the dry garden. Like, that's been really, really wonderful. And I remember, like, when I was even thinking about moving here and I was looking at, like, different places to live, I looked at Orchard Downs and I said, oh, cool, arboretum.
Yeah.
And that's really been such a wonderful thing. So yeah, that's been quite joyous.
Yeah, it's really a nice place. Do you have a favorite example of English building disrepair? Anything weird you've seen that sticks with you?
The room where we had our orientation, I remember, like, the paint was peeling off the wall, and I remember sitting there looking at that and thinking, like, is this what I'm in for?
Yeah. And yes, it is. Yeah. Have you met the rumored resident English building ghost?
No, I haven't. Please tell me the story of the ghost. I'm so interested in that sort of thing.
This is, it's something they tell on the campus tours. The old story is that there used to be a pool in the basement of the English building and someone drowned in there and their ghost haunts the halls. But if you talk to the people around the English department, few of them have any experience with this directly. It's just the story that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, even though I'm really super interested in the occult and the supernatural and whatnot, I'm such a skeptic in real life.
I have the same. I like the stories, but I don't believe
exactly. I've always wanted to go ghost hunting, but like everybody I know who does it, like I tell them up front, like I'm a skeptic and I'll do my best to disprove anything.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the reason, but I've never gotten to go.
What's the most recent non-student writing thing you've read?
Oh, I read a lot of fan fiction. Like, I sort of have to come out and say, like, yep, that's also one of my big research interests is fandom. I write and I consume much fan fiction. And the most recent thing was a Witcher fan fiction that a friend of mine sent me. And that was the most recent non-student thing that I was reading. Although, or we could also add to the list, like the novel that I'm working my way through is Swan's Way by Marcel Proust. So I guess, you know, a little bit of high literature and a little bit of well, whatever we want to say is the literature of the common people. The voice of the masses. But I mean, I guess that's one of the things that I always sort of I come back to, like writing about like weird fiction or weird tales that, you know, it might be considered to be, you know, low literature, but there's such a classist attitude behind that. Like, you know, because this is what the, you know, the proletariat read, you know, they go and they pay their 25 cents for this magazine. But, you know, I mean, in 1930s, you know, 25 cents was the cost of a glossy, like literary magazine too, so.
Yeah. One of the things I enjoy about U of I is we have this long history of cultural studies here where people are not inclined to get too upset about sorting high and low culture. You know, everybody really mixes everything together.
Right. Although if I can say a little thing about that, like I do get a bee in my bonnet a little bit about the fact that a lot of times when people look at like weird fiction or pulp literature from that era, they look at it from like a cultural perspective. Like what are the cultural attitudes expressed here? They don't look at it as literature. And that's something that like I do hope will change.
Right.
Yeah. And it is changing.
Yeah. So is there anything else, you know, you'd like to share with everybody?
Oh, goodness. I don't know if anybody in the department has a Dungeons & Dragons game going. Shout out. But yeah, I guess I did also want to talk just a little bit about like what specific stuff I'm interested in for my writing. Just because if there's anybody out there who is also doing this, like I'd love to just get together, like have a coffee and talk about that sort of thing. That like a big part of my writing has been, you know, being sort of between two cultures. My mom was born and raised in Hungary. I was born in Germany. I speak Hungarian and sort of, you know, grappling with the identity of not really being American and not really being Hungarian either is something that I come back to a lot in my writing. Like the novel that I wrote for my dissertation is really about that sort of idea. And also in the background of that, having the fact that like Hungary has a really disturbing past with things like the Holocaust, with what went on during the Soviet occupation and the socialist era. And even farther back from that, and that's something where like I think some people are able to like look at their ethnicity and say like, oh, you know, I'm proud to be whatever they are. I don't know if I could be proud to be Hungarian in the same way. I think a lot of people from Central Europe can probably identify with that.
I think so both of those things you just said, I imagine there will be people interested to hear that, definitely. So I'm so glad you said that.
Oh, sorry, if I could say one more thing, sorry.
Sure.
Yeah, that I identify as non-binary and I use they, them pronouns. So if you see me, a lot that my face is going to be attached to this, but just so people know. Anyway, that's also something I'm really interested in talking about. Like, I haven't actually incorporated that too much into the things that I've had published, but I am writing and trying to get published things that, like, deal more with queer identity. So if anybody wants to talk about that as well, I'm glad to grab a cup of tea.
So, Danny, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
So what are you teaching this semester?
I am teaching RIT 105, Writing and Research. Yes, I've been teaching that since I got here in the fall of 2020, and it's going really well.
Okay, good. Good, good. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Dayton, Ohio. So, I don't know, 4 hours away.
Okay. Do you like it here?
Yeah, I do. It's kind of a weird time to move to a new place, but it's been wonderful. Everyone here is so just generous and collaborative. I really like it.
Okay. Okay, good. And is that where you came from most recently, or did you go someplace else in the interim?
Well, before here, I taught at Florida Atlantic University in Boca Raton. And then before that, I taught at Sinclair Community College, which is in Dayton. And before that, I was at Miami University, where I graduated from with my master's.
Okay. Okay. And have you been teaching sort of same kind of stuff, RET, freshman comp, stuff like that?
Yes. First year writing. Introductory literature and writing courses, a few creative writing sections.
Wow. Okay, good, good. Okay, well, that brings me to what I really wanted to talk about is your creative writing. You're a creative writer. What genres, what are your interests, your topics?
I call myself an inspiring novelist. So it hasn't happened for me yet, but I'm still working towards it. So that can be kind of frustrating when it's like you work on something for a couple years and it doesn't really go anywhere, and so you start another long project and hopefully that one goes somewhere. So it just takes a lot of time, but it's very rewarding.
Oh yeah, I can totally relate to that. I'm still working on my first novel, which I was a short story writer and wanted to see if I could write a novella, and then this, it just turned into a bigger project. It's still not done. So yeah. Oh, what's it about? What are your themes? What are your topics?
It's a political satire about a president who's very bad at his job. So I don't know if that sounds familiar for the thing that's been happening, but
okay, sounds fun. Okay. What about outside things? Things, you know, not in school or writing?
Yeah. I teach and then I read and I write, so that takes up a lot of time, of course, but outside of that, I really like to cook. I really like like those garbage reality television shows. kind of a reality TV junkie.
What's your favorite thing to cook?
I love tofu. I am a vegan, so anytime I can make tofu into something new is very exciting for me. So bake it, fry it, dehydrate it, fry it, then freeze it, then bake it, you know, however I can get it right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've never had dried tofu. What's that
well,
like?
It's kind of like jerky. Yeah, if you marinate it and then bake it low and long, then it turns into kind of like a plant-based jerky.
Oh my goodness. It would be a nice thing to take back.
Yeah, oh for sure. Yeah.
Okay, because we go backpacking every summer, and I'm always looking for more things to dehydrate.
So. Where do you go?
UP, Michigan, the Porcupine Mountains, which are, if you've never been, it's just wonderful. It's right, wow. we usually get a site right on Lake Superior. So we, and it's they're called mountains, but they don't seem like mountains to me. And I don't feel like I'm mountain climbing, you know. But yeah, we always dehydrate stuff to take along. So that would be an exciting addition. There's only so much dried granola bars and peaches you can eat, you know.
Right, but, right.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have any pets? Cats?
I dogs, do.
Chickens? Oh, what do you have?
I have a dog named Sister. She had a sister back in Florida, but she passed away. She was 16, and so now it's just Sister. She is very vocal. She's a yelper. When you get home, she cries. When you say she wants to go out, she cries. When you say she gets food, she cries.
Is she an older dog too?
She's, I think, six maybe.
Oh, six. That's, oh. Yeah, you got some time with it. My dogs are both 15, so they're but they're doing really well. They go backpacking with us too. So, how is she, big, little, or what?
She's medium. She's brown and white. She's kind of like, she's a mix, but she's maybe part a corgi, part chihuahua, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, she's a mud.
Okay. What's the most surprising thing that's happened to you since you arrived in Champaign? I know it's been a while now. It came in 2020.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this past summer. It kind of felt like we were remote all last year, and then the summer happened and everyone was vaccinated, and it felt like everything was back to normal for a couple of months. And it was really wonderful. I met a bunch of people around town, and I got to try out a lot of the new restaurants and the bars and stuff, and it was a lot of fun. And then
did you find a favorite hangout?
I really like bunnies in Urbana.
Do you know that bar is so old?
Is it?
Bar is like 50. Oh yeah. Do you know the story about bunnies?
Someone said it had something to do with Hugh Hefner, but I wasn't sure if that was like Urbana legend.
No, yeah, he went to school here.
Oh wow.
He used to hang out here. Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's funny. So do you have a favorite example of English department disrepair in our building?
Oh my goodness. There of course is Catherine Gray's sign. Catherine Gray is behind this wall. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but I guess her office is hidden. And so there's this big sign that says Catherine Gray is behind this wall. But I took a wrong turn.
Wait, where's your office? Which office are you in?
I'm on the third floor in 315.
Okay, sure. That's the big one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
I took a wrong turn one day, and I was all of a sudden like at the. There were no tiles on the ceiling, and there were all these pipes and wires sticking
That's
out.
Right, it must have been. Oh my gosh, probably 10 years ago. They decided they were going to redo my office, kicked me out, and then they discovered the roof needed repair, a big slate roof. And so all the renovations on my office got stopped. Yeah, that's where I used to be.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Have you met our resident ghost yet?
No, I haven't had the pleasure.
Oh, okay. Well, you'll be in for a surprise.
Great. Can't wait.
Okay. Anything interesting that you've read lately?
I'm almost done with Marian Robinson's Housekeeping. This is the first time I've read that for me. I love it. It's so good.
Yeah.
Before that, I just finished winter break, I read a William Gaddis novel because they're kind of big, you know? And so I just finished A Frolic of His Own. And that's one of my favorite books I've read in a very, very long time.
Okay. I have not read that. But Housekeeping, is that the one where they go on a train, or is that the...
Yes, it's about trains. Yes, the two sisters live in the house, and the aunt comes and raises them.
Yes. I remember that now. Yeah. Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about, or anything you want to tell the community here?
One thing I do want to say maybe is that I've worked at a couple different places, and I've been a contingent of different stripes of, you know, teaching by the section, teaching overloads and stuff. This is by far the best community I've ever been a part of. And I'm just so excited for the solidarity here and the camaraderie here. I feel like, I don't know. There's just a lot of support and trust that I really appreciate.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Would that brings me to, are you a member of our union?
I am, yes.
Okay, good. Because that's why. I mean, in the old days before the union, we did not have that. I remember teaching semester to semester, and I remember not knowing. One time I was told that I could not be staffed, and I spent the whole summer looking for work. And the good news was I was very employable. I got like 5 or 6 job offers, all an hour away from home and all paying a pittance and then they called me like 2 days before school started and said I could teach business and technical writing if I wanted to. So those were hard times. But yeah, I agree. We have a wonderful community here, and the union has improved our lives so much in so many ways. It used to be so stressful to wonder, and do I have a job next semester? You know, because we used to get staffed semester by semester, and then they gave us annual contracts, which was a huge deal. But yeah, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. This was many years ago, but I was like the Friday before the semester was supposed to start, and I was teaching, you know, composition, so I didn't think to check the roster, but my class had not made and the section got canceled, and I was like, that's my rent. No.
Yeah, that's happened to me too. Yeah. Anyway, times are better, but you're right about the community. We have that because of the community amongst us and with our union, and that's why we have to keep it going. So
yeah, I was really lucky to speak with one of the other SF last semester, and I was just saying, you know, I feel really indebted to the people who work for this before I got hired, but I'm really happy to benefit from the work that everyone did back then.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, we pay it forward or whatever too, you know. Because we, even after the union came in, you know, it's not always smooth sailing. And I actually don't know when our contract is up for renewal again, but
I think it's a few more years, but I wish we could push up that deadline, because this certainly seems to be a something in the air.
Well, it has been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for coming by, and looking forward to seeing you in the hall. I might not see you in the halls too much because I'm actually teaching in China.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for doing this.
Yeah, so I went to Illinois State, so I have some kind of Illinois knowledge, but not of U of I. Mm-hmm. So I've been to Champaign and Urbana just a few times, but I'm not familiar with it very much. I got my PhD in rhetoric and technical communication and composition there. And I started last semester with the BTW group, and I had a fantastic first semester. Andrew was a great teaching mentor, So far I've taught BTW 250. This semester I was lucky and got a special topics course in writing studies, and teaching that. It's 380, and it's in my theme is disability language in the body. So it's disability rhetoric. So that's what I'm.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I am. So I've taught a course similarly in the past, but I never had this much stimulation from like they're stimulating me and I'm just challenged by them. They're just amazing group of students. So what we're focusing on is right now is just like the history of the disability movement. And we're talking about some of the rhetoric that surrounds disability. So talking about like normalcy and how it's actually a social construction, and how the norm is what has, without the norm, you wouldn't have a disabled body, that we're always compared to that norm. So we're looking at different films and artwork, and analyzing the representations of disability in those. Right now we're watching an awesome movie called Crip Camp. I'm just going to shout that out there. Crip, C-R-I-P, Camp. So it's a documentary about a camp for disabled teenagers back in the 70s. And it was the first time that a lot of disabled people were together, were treated like, you know, teenagers.
Yeah.
And it's about like that liberation. It took place during the 70s too. And then the rest of the movie is about like the ADA and things like that. So my students are doing a great job. We're playing with different modes for reading expressions. So we're doing multimodal responsive and audio responses to readings. And giving them a chance to express themselves in different ways to different users. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're incorporating form and content in the way that you're having the students do multimodal, making communicating in ways that are accessible to of people. What are some of the key concepts in terms? I'm not very up to date on disability.
Yeah, it's actually kind of the key concepts of a lot of, we're talking a lot about like the norm and for instance, normalcy. Another key concept is ableism. So we talk about which ableism is discrimination against people who are not able-bodied. So we have been talking about that. Access and inclusion is a huge component to the course. I actually have my students, they have to do an access audit where they have to travel a certain length of miles, and then they have to report on what was inaccessible with like the roads or the transportation or the building.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I would say my class is designed on like looking at representations of disability and then questioning, you know, constructs of the norm and what is and who is disabled. And then practicing some of the things that we're learning through our projects.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like a great course.
I'm really having fun. I'm really having a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wonderful when you can get to teach a class in your specialty.
Yeah.
So what are some of your research interests right now?
I had paused my research just, and you don't have to keep this on, but I paused my research because of my own health issues with disabled myself. But the thing that I've been working on last and what I will probably take up again in the summer is I've been looking at pain clinics. So chronic pain was part of my chronic pain as a disability was my dissertation. So I'm doing research with another scholar who also went to pain clinics for chronic pain. And so we're both writing about basically the surveillance rhetoric. Rhetoric of like punishment, regulation, and trying to norm their norm, people with chronic pain in a way that's kind of pretty dangerous and problematic.
So
there's a lot of like rehabilitation model where, you know, they'll take away, I've been to Mayo Clinic and a couple other places, and she was also at Mayo Clinic, and it was funny because she was at Mayo Clinic probably 7 years later than me, and yet the same thing they were doing there. So they would take people's canes away. They're against using assistive devices because they think it's, they want you to act as if nothing's wrong with you. If you have a migraine and you have a hat on your head, they make you take the hats off. So it's pretty, and it's a lot, most of them are all like that. So they're based on like a cognitive behavioral therapy approach, kind of change your behaviors, and then you'll,
using a cognitive behavioral therapy to treat chronic pain.
Which is useful in some ways, but it stops having a use. So mostly it's just like, oh, just the only way to get over it is just pretend you're not in pain and find a way past that. And so in my disability, it relates to my research interest because I'm interested in, disability as a positive identity. So even though chronic pain sucks, it's still a part of who we are, and trying to pretend that's not a reality in our lives. You know, I'd rather have people, we're talking about how we'd rather have medical professionals deal with us in how can we adapt? Like, how can your chronic pain, how can you live a full life with it rather than like, let's pretend it's not there and just get over it. So that's kind of what we're.
Right. I actually, my mom deals with, and she just turned 70 years old, and I did get her one of those, cognitive behavioral therapy workbooks.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to help in any way.
Yeah. No, CBT, and I don't want to say it's bad. CBT is really, I mean, it has a great foundation, but I think really great for people who have not thought about the way their behaviors relate to their functioning, right? So like, so it's a really good like start, and it makes people aware of like their thinking and how that thinking can further their pain, you know, psychologically, you're thinking things that are, so it has a place, but it needs to go beyond just how do we change your thoughts to, well, maybe there's some thoughts that don't get changed. So how do we deal with thoughts? Yeah. So
that's what
So basically it's like, I mean, overall it's like looking at the rhetorics of these different chronic pain places and then coming up with possible solutions to how this could be done better.
Like possible solutions through this idea of a positive.
Yeah. So how can
work?
How can pain? So we're hoping it's going to. I talked to the editors of Rhetoric of Health and Medicine, so that's kind of where we're geared towards. And part of their audience, part of that, they want you to speak to the, even though they might not ever read it, but they want you to speak to the medical professional as well by having something to offer into, this is a different way. This is a way that we should start thinking about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I have an MFA, so.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But I took a little bit of a hiatus. So it's nonfiction is my area. And so a lot of it was about what I'm talking about now, just kind of those experiences with disability and pain and other things too. But yeah, so they go together in that way. But I haven't written creatively in a long time and I miss it. So I'm hoping I can. There's such a great community. You guys have such a great community of creative writers. I wish I was there so I could.
It's a great program. Yeah.
So maybe I can get inspired to start something again.
By the way, where are you at right now?
Right now I'm in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
So, oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I've been at Western Michigan I was there for 4 years, and then they got rid of lecturers because of COVID. So then I looked for something else, and I found here, and Kay and David and Grade and really, it's been a very positive experience.
Yeah, they're really great. Good. We're glad to have you here. Some of the fun questions. Do you have any pets or anything like that?
I had a feeling you were going to ask me about pets, and I'm just like, no pets.
Yeah,
I have a son who sometimes feels like taking care of pets. Yeah. So I have a just turned 7-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But pets, no. I had 2 cats, and they died a while ago, and I was very allergic to cats. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to not get any new ones. So I got a kid instead.
Yeah.
There might be a small possibility of a little Bichon puppy in the future. But right now, no, we don't have any.
Yeah, but well, a 7-year-old, that's a good age. I have a nephew who's 5.5, and he's just
they're a lot of work.
they're a lot of work. But they're also they say the darndest thing.
Oh, so. I know. It's incredible what they say. Like, I should have tape recorder like around every time I like hear him. Because what they say is pretty cool. So no pets.
Yeah. What's the most surprising thing that's happened to you since you started teaching here, or at least remotely?
Yeah, I think what's been really, to be honest, the school I was at before was not as robust. The writing, not just the level of the writing, but the level of engagement. Mm-hmm. And that's perfectly understandable, because a lot of the students who go to that school are like first year generation students, or, you know, they're paying their own way. And so they have a lot of other things that are keeping them from kind of engaging as much. So the first thing I was surprised about is like how darn smart these kids are here at U of I. My other people weren't as smart, but they just have, they just know how to be better students, I think, than some of the students I've worked with before. Mm-hmm. The level of like people turning the work in, like it actually happens. Sometimes it's late, but it's still mostly turned in. Conversations. It's still hard to work remotely in terms of the camera situation. So I do synchronous, and it's always a battle to be like, come on, everybody. I don't make it mandatory to use a camera, because just kind of respecting people's privacy. And
right. Like, yeah. That's what I do too. But yeah, it's frustrating when you try to, you want to respect their privacy. You don't know what their home situation is.
Right. Like. Exactly.
But then you have to like really, you know, coax them to actually turn it on.
Yeah. And you have to, if they don't turn their camera on, it's been new to me, and it's hard, like the chat, like how much they use chat. And so I have to always be careful and go, oh, check chat. Because a lot of them are using chat as a means of talking. Or sometimes I'll have them like do an emoji, like put an emoji on if I'm making sense, or, you know.
Yeah.
And so I do stuff like that. So, So it's hard, because sometimes you feel like you're just talking to a bunch of boxes, right, with names in them, you know. So the writing class I'm doing right now, they're very engaged, and most of them have their cameras on, but the BTW ones are, I get like two or three in a class or something. So that's
It's funny. Here we in our first week we taught our classes.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm teaching film classes right now, and I have like a sort of it's almost like in a military situation where I'm like, the teacher is like the captain. There's like a sergeant who's the one who kind of gets the troops in line. And in one of my sections, I was being, you know, very polite, like please turn on your cameras and everything. And then another student came on, and she said, this is ridiculous. This is so difficult. And I'm like, whoa, this is good. I would like to have this.
Yeah. Unexpected, but
yeah. I'm like, this is, I need a sergeant in one of my classes.
Yeah, so far, I guess because my students knew before that it was going to be asynchronous, so they didn't have that shock of the first week, being secret. I think they're even engaged even when they're not, I read the responses, they seem like they pay attention, even though it feels like I'm talking to nobody sometimes, but overall I think it's been going pretty well with the remote. I do actually think the writing class would be better in person. I shouldn't say that because there goes my job. Just because there's so much interaction, it's hard to keep track of. I'm trying to learn how to navigate that.
The way I've been started thinking about it because before COVID, I was very much like moving online is going to be bad for teaching it to like this direction. But I kind of think of it now that I've experienced it, it has certain advantages and disadvantages, and teaching in person has some advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah, I definitely think there's some loss, but there's some gain. And both of them, and they both have use and merit. Some classes might be better for, different ones. But it's what I'm doing, but there's some students who really excel more in a remote environment and others not. So I do have quite a few times I have, students that I work with one-to-one and keep track of and keep them on ball a little bit more than I probably would do in person, because just to keep people on track. So I feel like they need sometimes an extra kind of push or an extra kind of mentoring thing to get them in. Yeah. So it's a little extra work in that way, but then I get to know them better, so that's okay. So then I'm getting to know them.
Yeah, it's hard to get that connection.
I do have one-on-one conferences throughout the semester.
That's a really good idea. Yeah.
So eventually they have to meet me.
So to wrap this up, just one more question. What are you reading just for fun right now?
Not reading.
What is the latest thing that you've read for fun?
I'll be honest, I still read young adult fantasy. And so I was reading apocalyptic young adult book. And that's what I was doing last. And now I'm reading Lindy West. I don't know if you know her. She's like a feminist writer. She's hysterical. She did Shrill on Hulu. It's her book. But I'm reading her book. Oh my God, I can't even remember the title. Witches, which is really funny and, really empowering. So I'm trying to be stay up on this, intellectual kind of reading, but then I need my escapism.
for sure. I guess for me, escapism right now is just watching old Simpsons episodes on Disney.
I go back to old ones that I like and go, oh, this makes me feel comfortable. This is like Seinfeld. I'll go back to Seinfeld sometime.
It's comfort food. And, especially in the winter time with this, with the new surge, it's been really great talking to you.
Me too. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for doing this.
My name is Bess. I am teaching Ret 105. So I taught that in fall and now in spring. And in general, what brought me here, I've been teaching first year writing for a while. I taught it at the University of Memphis and prior to that when I was in grad school at the University of Oregon. And so this was a good opportunity to have a reasonable course load and be able to teach first year writing with a, you know, new group of students. And so that's how I came here.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds about right. And you mentioned you were at the University of Memphis most recently.
Yeah, I worked at the University of Memphis for 2 years, the first 2 years of the pandemic. Obviously that was a really difficult situation, but my colleagues were really wonderful. I was teaching first year writing, and I also worked as the assistant director of the first year writing program. And so helped the program migrate fully online and then do the hybrid dance. Prior to that, I did my PhD at the University of Oregon. And my PhD is in comparative literature with focuses on classics and classical rhetoric and reception with some literary studies thrown in. So I sort of have a winding path to teaching first year writing.
It sounds like you're bridging a little bit of our gap in our department between writing studies and literary studies. That's a fabulous transition to exactly what I wanted to ask you about next, which was about your professional interests outside of teaching, your research. If you could tell us a little bit about some of your research, that would be great.
Sure. Most generally, my research is in classical rhetoric and reception, recognizing that the word classical and classics in general is a loaded and often problematic term. So more specifically, I, in my current research, focus on Plato and Platonic rhetorical theory, but I've also worked on just general classical rhetoric, and I've also published on translation studies as it pertains to ancient texts. I have spent a lot of time of late with Plato, which I think if I had told myself that early in my graduate school career, I would have been really surprised, because I entered graduate school thinking that I would focus mostly on translation theory. And I did that, and I still really adore that. But then I was assigned to read Plato's Timaeus in the middle of grad school, and that sort of changed the course of things. And so recently I published an article on his dialogues, The Timaeus and Sophist, and I'm currently working on a book project that builds on that material, thinking through this dialogue, The Timaeus, which is not really read in a rhetorical studies or writing studies context. It's a dialogue on natural philosophy and the origins of the universe and the relationship between human beings and what's outside of the stuff we can see, thinking about that in the context of Plato's rhetorical theory.
Very good, thanks. And have you found, since you've gotten here, you've had much opportunity to work on those projects? Is it sort of, what stage are you at with those?
Yeah, I was lucky that someone mentioned the first book writing group to me relatively early after I arrived here. And so I joined that group. And so I've been working in collaboration with with colleagues there to start outlining and building the schema of the book. So that's where I am in the project development. I am still sketching out the structure of the book and writing bits and pieces here and there, things that I deleted from earlier articles, seeing where they fit now that I have this bigger project. And so I do most of my personal research and writing over the summer. So right now I'm sort of in preparation mode for working on things from about, you know, May to August.
Yeah, very good. That sounds very familiar. what one accomplishes during the school year is pretty limited. Outside of your research and teaching, do you have any other interests you'd like to tell us about, whether they be sort of general hobby interests or they be another direction, sort of professional interests?
Sure. One of the things I did right after I arrived in Memphis was I signed myself up for aerial arts classes because I am afraid of heights. And I responded really positively to that. So I was able to do that in Memphis. And now here I've continued with circus arts. And that's a really great, I think, having a hobby that you don't have to be good at, that also kind of keeps you grounded and embodied. I think so often, especially because I work on a lot of relatively esoteric material, I get caught up in the ether of things. And so, that's sort of my main hobby outside of teaching, which has been really, actually really positive. And I think I teach and I research better now that I'm, I don't know, moving around and in my body more. So, yeah.
That's really impressive. I'm also afraid of heights, and I can only, that's really impressive that you took that on. That's incredibly cool. That sounds cool all the way around. So let's see, we have a series of five short questions we wanted to ask everybody, and they're mostly sort of little goofy things. But the first one is, and I think I know the answer to this already, but do you have any pets?
I do. I have one tabby cat named Ezra. He is 6.5. He's currently sleeping, which is probably for the best for the purposes of this interview, because he makes himself known at every opportunity. He's very loud. Anytime I have to teach on Zoom, he's right there with me. So yes, I have one pet. We are very codependent. Ezra, love of my life.
Very cool. That I bet the students enjoy that too when Ezra's on screen. Yeah. What do you think is the most surprising thing that's happened to you since you've come here to UIUC or moved here to the Urbana-Champaign area?
I have been really pleasantly surprised by how many people have reached out to me without knowing me, professors, colleagues, because I work on material that's related to their material or just to meet up. And not that I didn't expect people to be friendly, but it's very hard moving in the middle of, you know, what's still a pandemic, and people have been, really supportive and just reached out and just sort of said hi, introduced themselves. So I feel like I have a lot more contacts on campus and in the community than I expected, which has been very positive.
That makes me really happy. I'm really glad to hear that. Do you have a favorite example of English building disrepair?
Oh, like the actual physical building. I was thinking like mental disrepair.
No,
or something.
No, it's a building.
One time, this isn't really disrepair, but I also have a phobia of bugs. And I one time saw one bug in one bathroom, and now I can never use that bathroom again. So that we've given up on that bathroom, we need to find a different bathroom. So that's not really disrepair. I just, never again.
I think it qualifies. The wildlife in the English building definitely qualifies. And speaking of the English building, have you met the English building's rumored resident ghost?
I have not, but I would love to. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, we have yet to talk to anyone who has, but it is a story they tell on all the campus tours that the English building is haunted. And what is the most recent non-student writing you've gotten to read?
That's a really great question. probably we can take out all of this silence as I think about my answer.
Edit this out, John.
I think I'm going to cheat a little because it is a little bit student writing, but this semester I'm trying to localize the readings that I have assigned to my Ret 105 class. And so I've gone through a lot of local newspapers and our school newspaper and combed through opinion pieces and just finding out sort of institutional history, what are conversations that have happened on campus and in the community. So that's the most recent non, some of it's written by students in that it was written for the school newspaper, but not my students. And that's been really educational just for me. I like knowing what has gone on here and what is on people's minds and what are issues that have been in play for a while. And so that's the most recent non-student writing is, you know, using the excuse of assigning readings for my class to read through local newspapers and get all the details on the area.
That makes a lot of sense, and certainly makes a lot of sense in context of teaching rhetoric, without a doubt. So that's sort of the end of our formal questions. We tend to ask everybody after that if there's anything else they'd like to share with our audience, which is mostly people within the Department of English who listen.
Yeah, I don't know where this would fit, but something that I continue to think about and work on as someone who works with ancient Greek and Roman materials is the place of classical rhetoric in a rhetoric program. And I say that because on the one hand, I have a very real material investment in the presence of ancient material in writing programs. On the other hand, I really struggle with whether, you know, we need or should continue to rely on texts that have been received and used in really objectively bad ways that have upheld a kind of prizing of Western in heavy quotation marks, Western thought, Western rhetoric and rhetorical theory and rhetorical traditions. So I mention that because on the one hand, if anyone wants to have conversations and help me work through that, that would be great. On the other hand, just because Aristotle and Plato and Quintilian and Cicero, although they're not necessarily present in name in a lot of writing programs, are sort of there in the background. And I'm glad that I get to work through that, continue to work through that alongside students and hear about what their conceptions of rhetoric are, where they've heard the term, what kind of writing they're doing in their day-to-day lives, and figuring out whether whether this ancient material is still relevant or whether, you know, we should move forward from it. So that's something that I wanted to mention.
Yeah, great. I'm so glad you did, because to a certain inexpert degree, I know a lot of us have been struggling with that for a long time. If only in the sense of matching the two halves of the course, writing and research, and thinking about how they relate to each other in a writing across the curriculum sort of context. So I'd be willing to bet there are people who would definitely like to discuss that. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Bess. This has been really fun.
Thank you so much for having me. And I am so happy to be here and have more conversations in the future. So thanks.
Do you want to do a fun take, a goofy take?
No, because you always use the goofy one, right?
You don't trust me. I almost had you. Let's just do the fun take.
Yeah.
For fun. I won't use it.